Oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Yesterday, we heard the Minister of Health admit that there has been a significant delay in sending out pandemic pay that was promised to frontline workers. He was actually forced to apologize for letting those workers down. He admitted that the government could and should have done a better job. But the Premier, in stark contrast, refused to admit that his government made a mistake in cutting assistance to more than 200,000 low-income seniors and disabled persons in British Columbia. The impact of that decision has caused anger, uncertainty, and pain. So today, will the Premier do the right thing? Stand up and end the clawback.
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And I thank the Leader of the Opposition for her newfound concern for vulnerable populations in British Columbia. I went back to my office, Honourable Speaker, yesterday just to confirm some data that I shared with the public yesterday. And I just want to reiterate some of the points I made. For the interest of those new members to the Liberal caucus, you'll be interested to know that between 2001 and 2016, the BC Liberals increased contributions monthly to people with disabilities by $200. This government did that in 2 years, not 16 years. People new to the caucus will be interested to know, they'll be interested to know that for people on income assistance, the BC Liberals increased that monthly stipend by $100 over 16 years. We increased it by $150 in 2 years. Members would be interested to know also that since the pandemic hit British Columbia, we have increased annually the contributions to people with disabilities and people on income assistance by $2,250, and yet somehow, in their indignation, the BC Liberals find a place to say their $200 contribution to vulnerable populations over a decade and a half is superior to $2,250 in the past 12 months.
Leader of the Official Opposition on her first supplemental.
Well, we should be clear about the indignation. The indignation is coming from persons with disabilities, organizations, and British Columbians who are being impacted by the decision that this Premier made not a year ago or 2 years ago or way, way back in the past. And the Premier can laugh. The bottom line is that the indignation that the opposition is expressing is the view of hundreds and hundreds of families that are being deeply impacted by the decision that this Premier made a week ago. So let's hear what it means to a parent like Scarlett Nelson, who said, and I quote, about the decision that this Premier made a week ago. She said, and I quote, "To take this away, I'm going to have to go to the food bank twice a week again. I'm worried about January. It's the hardest month for the whole year to manage," end quote. The government admitted that it could have done a better job in making sure that frontline workers got their promised pandemic pay, and we agree. Will the Premier stand up and make a similar admission that in fact he made a mistake and reassure families and parents like Scarlett that he will end the clawback?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Certainly, Charlotte will be able to access the Child Opportunity Benefit, $1,000 per child, another $800 for every subsequent child, a new program introduced by this government, not to the age of 6, but to the age of 18. That helps families. Some of the Liberals on the other side weren't here when the heartless group that ran this province up to 2016 eliminated the transportation subsidy for vulnerable populations, forcing them to stay at home rather than go out and interact in the community. We reinstated that transportation allowance. introduced the Climate Action Tax Credit. We did a host of other initiatives over the past 2.5 years, and we're just getting started, honourable members, because British Columbia now has a poverty reduction strategy. And it makes sense to normal people that if you want to dig yourself out of a hole, the first thing you do is stop digging. The Liberals never got that. And the second thing you do is you build a plan, a comprehensive plan, not a month-by-month plan, not a politically motivated plan, but one that will help people. That's what we're all about, and that's what we're doing.
Leader of the Official Opposition, second supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Let's talk about a month-by-month plan. Let's talk about families who are worried they're going to have to make a second trip to the food bank or won't be able to afford a jacket for their child. That's not about 16 years ago or 5 years ago. It's about last week. It's about one of the first actions that this newly elected premier took. And he can stand up and bluster and spin and do whatever he wants, because we know that when he does that, he knows he is wrong. This government made a mistake, and they can characterize it however they want. They are cutting the supplement to low-income families and persons with disabilities. And to make matters even worse, yesterday, the Premier stood up here in the legislature and hinted, by the way, we'll go through the budget process, and you know what? We might just make it permanent. So here families sit. They sit worried and upset and frightened and angry at this Premier's decision. So the Premier has an opportunity right now. He doesn't have to wait for a budget process, which, by the way, will take these families until May. He could stand up today, just like the Minister of Health did yesterday, admit he made a mistake, and stop the clawback now.
Premier of British Columbia.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And I'll just remind the member that the first thing that this government did was bring forward a supply bill that will put $1,000 in the pockets of families, all families, all families, all families, $500 in the pocket of individuals. Now, I appreciate that the member from Vail Mount is spiraling into the stratosphere.
Members.
Her party, when given the opportunity to help vulnerable people, not just for 1 month, not just for 1 year, but for 16 years, increased disability pensions by $200. The people you're talking about right now, honourable member, will have the same amount of money. In fact, they'll have $50 more in their pocket as a result of the COVID benefit and the COVID benefit supplement that we put in place. $2,250. Since the pandemic hit, is going into the pocket of vulnerable populations. We had the support of the opposition at that time, as we should have. I cannot understand why the first piece of business for the new leader of the opposition is to play politics with an issue her party did nothing about for a decade and a half.
Members, let's have a question and let's have an answer. Member for Peace River North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's quite clear that this is making the Premier very uncomfortable to answer these questions. All he's been doing is reflecting everything that we've asked, and he's not dealing with the issue. It is this Premier, it is this government that has done this clawback. And this is what Keir Gray has to say, and I quote, slashing the COVID benefit in half when the pandemic is far from over, will force disabled and impoverished people to make impossible choices between sanitizers and masks, medications, or groceries. To the Premier, will he do the right thing today and reverse this decision?
Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Peace River North for the question. People should know that when the workers' benefit was established in March for a three-month period, people on income assistance and people on disability assistance and people on receiving the seniors supplement were not eligible for that workers' benefit. So the province instituted a $300 a month supplement. That supplement was renewed not once, but twice, and brings us to this month where everyone I just mentioned will be getting $300 supplement. In addition, the province instituted a recovery benefit, which is eligible. People on income assistance, disability assistance, and the senior supplement are eligible for that. And so I urge people to ensure that they make their application, because it will result in them receiving actually more money by the end of March than they otherwise would have.
Member for Peace River North on supplemental.
Speaker, I'm baffled by the responses that we're getting from this government, and so are British Columbians. Vivica Ellis is the director of the BC Poverty Reduction Coalition. And this is what Vivica has to say, and I quote, "We're dropping the poorest and most at-risk individuals further below the poverty line. In January, in the middle of a pandemic, it's not the kind of action that we need to see in British Columbia at this time," end quote. Mr. Premier, do the right thing and reverse the decision. Will he do that today?
Minister of Social Development.
Thank you very much for the follow-up question. In fact, what the member should be telling constituents, as I have been, that in fact they are eligible for more money than they would have been under the current system. And in fact, you know, I sat in the opposition benches for I think 12 years when we repeatedly asked the government to pay a little bit of attention to people living in poverty, maybe make a plan to try to address the issues that we saw all around us for all those 12 years in opposition that I sat there. And it started before that. We, as soon as we became government, we increased disability rates, we instituted a poverty reduction strategy, and we've continued to follow with that goal to reduce poverty. So as a reminder to the member for Peace River North and to his colleagues, our constituents are eligible to apply and are eligible to receive, in fact, more money by the end of March than they otherwise would have. And if, for example, individuals will receive $50 more, single parents will receive considerable amount more, $500 more. So I think that it's important remind British Columbians that we are all 3.7 million British Columbians are eligible for this benefit. They should apply and they will receive.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you. Member for Kelowna Mission.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. The arrival of the vaccine yesterday brought a glimmer of hope. But health officials have been clear. The vaccine isn't getting into long-term care homes anytime soon. That's why the call for widespread use of rapid testing in long-term care facilities is growing louder. As of yesterday, there were 1,305 active COVID cases in long-term care homes. That number continues to increase. And why is this so serious? Well, the COVID-19 mortality rate for those above 80 is 39%. A study done by Dr. Rohit Vij of UBC showed that, and I quote, "Every extra layer of protection can save lives, and rapid testing is an additional step," end quote. To the Premier, given that rapid tests are an additional level of protection, will he now act to protect our vulnerable seniors and mandate rapid testing in all long-term care homes?
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. First of all, with respect to vaccines, the member suggests the vaccines will not be used to address the situation in long-term care. That's not correct. The first doses of vaccine will be going to workers in long-term care. One of the ideas is to ring-fence long-term care to stop new infections in long-term care facilities. And I think that makes sense. It's guided by the science and it's guided by the provincial health officer. That doesn't mean that the situation in long-term care is going to get immediately better right away. But every time we immunize someone, it makes things better. As we discussed, the last rapid testing is not the answer in long-term care, although it has uses there, and that's why we are engaging right now in pilot projects in long-term care. One, because there are insufficient numbers of rapid tests. Two, the rapid test is insufficiently accurate with respect to asymptomatic cases, as the member knows, and as Dr. Henry has repeatedly explained. We are using rapid testing in British Columbia to help assist in dealing with the COVID-19 crisis and pandemic. But I think it's fair to say that this is not an ideological question, it's not a question of one political policy against another. It's a medical and healthcare question. And I have taken the advice of people who are responsible, who do this for in their lives in terms of the advice of infection testing. And their advice is to use rapid testing in the way that we're using it in British Columbia. And so I think that it's important to have and continue to have this thing, but to suggest that in any way the situation in long-term care is not my first and foremost priority. The first and foremost priority, Dr. Henry and everyone in the healthcare system is incorrect. We're taking every possible action to protect people in long-term care because we know, as the member suggests, the vulnerability
Thank you, Minister.
In long-term care to COVID-19.
Unfortunately, the audio was not very clear, so let's see next time. It probably would be working all right. Member for Kelowna Mission on supplemental.
Well, I'll try to respond to whatever I heard. I think I heard the minister say it wasn't accurate, but it is 70% accurate. Isn't 70% now better than 90% in 3 days with 30 more exposures? Well, the net present value of rapid tests does seem real. And I do agree with the minister that when he said it does not mean it's going to get better right away in long-term care facilities, as I believe what he said. The reality is the BC government is already using rapid tests. It's using them in First Nations and in rural BC populations. We're also seeing them used for asymptomatic subjects at airports or on film sets. So the question is, why aren't we doing the same for our most vulnerable populations, like seniors, students, their families, caregivers, teachers? Time Magazine's headline, "How Can We Stop the Spread of COVID-19 by Christmas?" written by Harvard epidemiologist Michael Mina, says the number one way to stop the spread is routine, widespread, rapid testing. Yes, there's hope with a vaccine, but the next 4 months in long-term care facilities are going to be rough, with some of the highest numbers of deaths we've seen so far. Will the Premier do the right thing and implement the widespread use of rapid tests to protect our vulnerable populations of seniors and students?
Minister of Health.
The priority given to long-term care is reflected in our use of the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, which will be going to protect workers in long-term care. I think that's an important consideration. It doesn't resolve the question right away, but we are working to provide a recess fence around long-term care to protect residents, to protect staff, to protect everybody. As I noted, rapid testing has its uses, and we are using it in responding to COVID-19 in British Columbia. That advice is being driven by people who know this question, who know the appropriate uses of the testing. The tests that we have are not licensed in Canada for asymptomatic testing. They are not licensed in Canada because of limits to their accuracy. You make decisions in this pandemic to protect people, and you make them the best decisions based on the scientific evidence. And that's what's happening in D.C. The member refers to Michael Mina, who is an advocate for home tests. Well, there are no home tests licensed currently in Canada at all. So the approach we're taking to rapid testing is to use it where it is helpful to preventing the spread of COVID-19. That's what we're doing. We're following the science in order to do it. And I think that's the appropriate approach in BC.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I want to tell the Premier and the Minister of Health about Peter. Peter is 91 years old. He lives in a care facility in Langley. Last month, an employee tested positive, and his home went on lockdown. And I think the Premier and the Minister know when that happens, the senior residents of that home are isolated in their rooms for virtually all day, all night. Jack lives in a care facility in Mission. Now, the same thing happened. On Sunday, Jack turned 92. He didn't see his wife, didn't see any members of his family. In fact, he couldn't even have a phone call with them because the staff in the facility were too busy dealing with the lockdown caused when COVID entered that care facility. Jack's my dad. But this is happening everywhere. This is happening to thousands of people. Look, rapid testing reduces the risk. It doesn't eliminate the risk. We can't eliminate the risk of transmission. But if we have a tool that will significantly reduce the risk of transmission to seniors living in care facilities, for heaven's sakes, why aren't we using it?
Minister of Health.
Honorable Speaker, I first of all want to express my solidarity with the member for Abbotsford West. It affects his family, it affects my family, it affects people across BC who are often whose family members and residents who are dealing with lockdowns and long-term care as a result of our outbreak response. It's a very serious situation. And so he will understand that if the decision was made that rapid testing would assist in that, we would make that decision. That is not the evidence before us in D.C. Let's be clear about that. It's a question that Dr. Henry and that others have repeatedly answered in this respect. You only do things and you only make initiatives if they make things better. The evidence is, and he will know, that rapid testing is not licensed in Canada in asymptomatic cases. It's important to note that. It's important to note that there are issues, especially in respect to asymptomatic cases, not symptomatic, but asymptomatic cases, with the accuracy of rapid testing. And inaccuracy in this area is a major problem with respect to outbreaks. We are using rapid testing, and we are looking at ways to use them to enforce our layers and enhance our layers of protection in long-term care. But this is not an ideological question where the opposition argues one thing and someone else argues another. We are making decisions based on the best possible advice of our experts in the area and our experts in the area. Dr. Henry and many others have said that we are using rapid testing in the appropriate way, considering its limitations. If a member thought for one second we believe that rapid testing would make things better in that way, then we would, of course, be using it. And we are, in a limited way, to see what more can be done.
Member for Abbotsford West on supplemental.
Thank you. I'm not trying to advance ideology. I'm trying to advance common sense. The minister knows better than virtually anyone that we have entered the deadliest phase of this pandemic, and seniors, particularly seniors in care facilities, are going to bear the brunt of that risk in the weeks and months ahead. There is a tool, not a perfect tool, but a tool called rapid testing that is being used at airports. It's being used on movie sets, for heaven's sakes. It's being used in rural communities. It's being utilized across Canada to reduce the risk. And I, quite frankly, do not understand the governments, the ministers, the premier's reluctance, refusal to deploy that tool in a way that will reduce the risk to seniors living in care facilities that have already suffered and for whom this tool will not only add an additional layer of protection, but will improve their quality of life.
Minister of Health.
Well, thank you again. Again, to the member, I would say the approach that we're taking with respect to rapid testing is to use it in the areas in which it can be effective. As you know, rapid testing in asymptomatic cases is not licensed for that, and there's a reason for that. and that you only add and implement change if it makes things better. And in the judgment of all of our medical experts, that's not the case. We are in fact using it, rapid testing, in a selective way, in a very similar way to other jurisdictions in Canada. We are going to continue to take absolutely every step we can to protect long-term care. This is the most important priority right now. It's the reason why we need everybody in the community to engage in physical distancing and to not engage in gatherings over this holiday season. It's the reason why our long-term care workers are working so hard, and we're taking all the steps we've taken to protect long-term care. We're going to continue to do that and take every step possible, including where it's helpful, where it makes things better, rapid testing to do that. And we're going to continue to do what we've done from the beginning in British Columbia, not make decisions based on what sounds good, but what's based on the medical evidence led by the extraordinary public health team that are leading our response.
Member for Fraser-Nicola.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, British Columbians have trusted public health to share information. This has been a critical element in our COVID response so far. Yet for months, parents, teachers, and staff across the province have dealt with rising anxiety and concern related to COVID in our school system. But the government has ignored these concerns. An inadequate notification system that varies from school district to school district is clearly not working. To the Premier, will he give parents the information they need on school exposures today?
Minister of Education.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I'd like to thank the member for the question, my first in this House. And I'd like to say it is a tremendous honour to stand here in this House as the new Minister for Education. I want to say that I know what an exceptionally challenging time this is for all of us in our communities, and particularly for those who are on the front lines of dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly folks in our education sector. And I want to express our incredible gratitude for the work, exceptional work that is being done by teachers, by support staff, by administrators, of course, our rights holders and parents and kids to keep our schools safe. We know that keeping kids safe in school is one of the most important things we can do throughout this pandemic. It's important for children to stay, have access to in-class learning, and we've been working very hard with our partners over the course of the pandemic to ensure that there are robust safety plans in place and that we have robust lines of communication so that we're communicating to the best of our ability the circumstances that are occurring in schools. We are working on a regular basis, daily in fact, with our partners to ensure that those communication lines, those notification systems are in place. And we've recently seen in fact in the Fraser Health Authority changes to try and respond to what is absolutely I can understand terrific anxiety particularly around with parents or in those areas where we're seeing increased community transmission, and we'll continue to work very hard with our partners in that regard. Thank you.
Member for Fraser-Nicola, supplemental.
Other provinces provide the daily number of new cases, how many are related to students and staff, how many schools have reported a case, how many are closed, and even how many confirmed student or staff cases there are per school. In BC, this government says it does not even know, and it is unable to provide a daily total number of in-school exposures. Again, to the Premier, we have anxious parents, students, and staff. Will you ensure that every parent in the province has access to the information they need to know that their child is safe in school?
Minister of Education.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I do want to thank the member for a concern that we all share with respect to taking all steps that we possibly can to do our best to alleviate anxiety to the greatest extent possible during this unprecedented period that we're all living through. I know that we have seen increased case counts, increased transmission in communities, particularly in the Fraser Health region, and that has given rise to increased anxiety, absolutely. And we've seen the provincial health officer direct her staff to form a rapid response team to better support health authorities and schools to work through responding to the need for information when it when we are seeing notifications. And we've seen developments in Fraser this week, the introduction of a new early notification system that we are monitoring very closely, and that by all reports so far is helping to provide more information more quickly. Our approach to contact tracing, which has been such an important part of the COVID strategy, is aiding in that regard greatly. We have committed to hiring 1,200 new contact tracers. 1,100 of those are already in place and are working around the clock to support our ability to contact trace and to get information out to parents. So we will continue to work with our partners, continue to work to improve communications at the ground so that we can work to alleviate anxiety to the greatest degree that we can. Thank you.
The bell ends question period.